Yeah, they go up and they don't, unfortunately, stay down. Hello and welcome to the show. It's the guest host. My name is Izzy Weiss. I'm going to be sitting in for Eli Gray till the Heat and Pacer game finishes. So he will happily jump in and do his duty. As it appears, it's the end of the third quarter with the Heat leading 70-57. Comebacks have been made in this series and in the NBA playoffs this entire playoff season. So who knows? Maybe there is some magic left in the Pacer tank. But that being said, I don't want to talk basketball right now, even though that is what's going on. I want to talk baseball. I want to talk Yankee baseball. What happened? What exactly happened these past four games? I mean, the Yankees were just dominated by the Mets. When was the last time you heard someone utter those words? The Mets' dominance of the New York Yankees. This is a Yankee town. The Mets have no business playing here. The Mets are a weak team. The Mets start an awful outfield. The Mets, blah, blah, blah. But no. So I figure, you know what? Because the Mets swept the Yanks, I think I have to eat some crow. So I'm going to play a song in honor of all you Mets fans. Enjoy. I can't stand that song. And you know what, my friends, when I was growing up, they used to play it for me all the time. They would play that awful, awful Mets song. But you know what, you guys earned it. You swept the Yanks. You swept the team that up until a couple of games ago was at the top of their division in the American League East. But recently, as of tonight, the Yankees are actually, I believe, two games back as Boston won their game. And the Yankees lost, obviously, to the Mets, and we're swept. So the AL East still shapes up with Boston in first place and the Toronto Blue Jays in last place. What is there to say, really, about the American League right now? I got to say I'm very impressed. The Angels have been on a tear over the past 10 games. They've gone 8-2. They've pitched pretty well. They started to hit. I mean, Trout's always going to hit. Let's face it, Mike Trout is a star in the making, this kid. Let's put it this way. If Miguel Cabrera wasn't tearing it up, you'd hear more about Trout. Obviously, Chris Davis has been Brady Anderson-ing it up. And for those of you who are familiar with baseball back in the mid-90s, Brady Anderson was a center fielder for the Baltimore Orioles. He hit 50 home runs in a season, and after that, basically nothing. He had a nothing or a semi-nothing career. And people always questioned, was he a juicer? I don't know, you tell me. But yes, Chris Davis is having an awfully amazing season with 19 homers. Guys batting like around 360. It's pretty ridiculous. I mean, everyone's going to speculate, is he juicing? Is he doing this? Is he doing that? What's going on? The point is, he is playing phenomenally. The Orioles are at the middle of the pack. They're five games above 500. After winning tonight, I believe that would make them six games above 500. Let's talk a little AL Central. We've got the Detroit Tigers at 29-22. And Verlander has yet to turn it on. So let's wait and see. Justin Verlander, when this guy comes on, they should dominate that division. The Indians have played pretty well up until about a week ago. They're only 3-7 in their last 10 games. They need to step it up. They need to pick it up. They need to do what they were doing, because the reality is Justin Masterson cannot carry the team. That is a fact. To be honest, when you look at that division, you can't really see any other teams other than the Detroit Tigers really contending for the Central. And you could look at the West, the AL West. It's the Oakland Athletics. I don't know, Billy Beane is a genius or a god. I don't know what he wakes up in the morning and smokes, drinks, or shoots. I have no idea how this man takes garbage puts it together with glue and turns in perennial winners. I mean, solid teams. They're playing unbelievably well. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They're at 31-24. They're three games back of the Rangers. The Rangers are, well, the Rangers, I mean, when they're pitching decently, they're always going to hit. So let's be honest. So long as they do what they're doing, so long as they're clubbing the ball, giving their pitchers good run support, they should definitely win the West. The Angels, again, as I had mentioned earlier, they are nine games back. So let's not jump to conclusions and say, well, they're completely out of it. Nine games early, well, it's actually we're almost in June. So it is possible for them to make a run at the wild card. But again, it is just too early to tell. The National League East, the New York Mets at 22-29 still. 9.5 games back of first place with the Atlanta Braves at 31-21. The Atlanta Braves with a strong rotation, good hitting, and some guy at the end of the pen, I'm not sure if you've heard of him, his name is Craig Kimbrell. He throws about 98, 99 with velocity. He's pretty consistent, and I think the guy gives up a run like every, I don't know, 50 innings or so. He's just that good. He is that unbelievable. Him and Aroldis Chapman are the two, I guess you could say, live arms in the pen when you look at Major League Baseball closers now, guys that are throwing gas. I mean, you can go through it. A guy like Parnell of the Mets, he's having a pretty strong year. He's 4-1. He's got a couple of saves, quite a few saves. He's got a 1.88 ERA, which is pretty solid for any Met pitcher to throw that. Obviously, what can we say about Matt Harvey? I honestly don't know what to say. What is going on out there is pretty ridiculous. Maybe it's his girlfriend, that supermodel V something. I forgot her name. I don't know. I kind of saw her, and I didn't really look at the name for obvious reasons. But who can explain what is going on with Matt Harvey? Because I've got no idea. I don't know. He's throwing unbelievably well. And yet, the Mets are seven games below 500. Imagine they didn't even have Matt Harvey. If they did not have Matt Harvey on the hill, where would they be? I don't know. They could very well be 15 games under 5. That's a possibility. I guess now we can take a jump to the NL Central. Look at the St. Louis Cardinals. My God, they're 35-17. They are playing solid baseball. And no Chris Carpenter. They're hitting. Their bullpen has been semi-good. I don't know what to say. They're just playing really, really, really well. The Pittsburgh Pirates, they're such an angry team. Because they're kind of like, they're not made like the Oakland Athletics. They're not created the same way as the Oakland Athletics. But it's like a bunch of trash, like scrubs that they managed to pick up off waiver wires and just stick them together with glue, duct tape, I don't even know what. And they managed to perform unbelievably well. They're 13 games up. And we're at the beginning of June. Are you kidding me? Jason Grilly's got 23 saves. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Jason Grilly, he is a career relief guy who basically never really did much. He was just cut here, waved here, thrown there, pitched this ball, that ball. He's been everywhere, and yet the guy comes and he's throwing 94, 95 with velocity. Guys cannot touch him. What is going on in Pittsburgh? Can they contend? Can they continue? Can they continue this crazy strong pace of strong baseball? By the way, just to let you guys know, I see that we have a couple of guys in the queue, a couple of callers. We will take calls shortly. We're just going to go finish up with this baseball update. And we'll go to a break, and then I will happily take a call right after it, okay? So just letting you know, don't worry, you're going to get picked up. I promise you, not by me or by someone in on a street corner in New York City. Okay, that was pretty terrible. So we're going to take a look at the NL West, the Arizona Diamondbacks that fluctuate up and down. That entire, the AL, I don't even know what there is to say about the NL West. It just, it's like when you look at all the teams involved from top to bottom, the last team is seven games out. We're talking the Dodgers, who again have been an utter failure. It's really sad that the Dodgers aren't performing. They've got a pretty large amount of salary that they're paying, and they're not getting any results other than Clayton Kershaw. Adrian Gonzalez has been hitting pretty phenomenally lately, but let's be honest, Adrian Gonzalez will not and cannot carry the Dodgers. The Dodgers have to win with pitching because the NL West is all about pitching. That's what they do. San Fran, well, Colorado, okay, fine. They don't really pitch. When they pitch well, they hit well, and let's look at it from this perspective. You got a guy in Tulo who is an absolutely phenomenal hitter. They manage to grab guys who can hit 20, 25 a year. They're strong when it comes to that end of it. Betancourt's not terrible. He's been pretty good as their closer overall. You got the Padres. I don't even really know what to make of the Padres. There's no strong bullpen. One of the best in the majors. Very strong bullpen. I'm not a huge fan of the starting pitching. I don't really like it. Their hitting is subpar. Everett Cabrera is having a very, very, very strong coming out season. He's playing as far as from a fantasy perspective, he's been performing pretty solidly. Chase Headley, obviously, coming back from the injury. They need more production out of him. But the NL West is, honestly, it's wide open. Anyone can grab it. The best pitching, obviously, is the San Francisco Giants. And if Ryan Vogelsong can come back and they can get that rotation going, they should be the favorite to win the NL West. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I will take a call. And we are back. We're going to take a call. You are on the air. Who am I speaking with? You have to speak.
Whoa, me?
I believe that would be you, sir. Who is this?
Oh, my name is Michael. How you doing?
I am fine. What would you like, Michael?
I would like to speak about many, many things. Where's Eli, first of all?
Where is Eli? Eli is currently watching the NBA playoffs. He's watching his Miami Heat take on the Pacers.
Oh, wow.
So, unfortunately, he is not available at the moment, but as soon as that game ends, he will join me.
We're missing DJ. DJ was the old host of the show. Where is DJ?
Honestly, I have no idea. He may have taken a sabbatical to Africa. I have no clue. But all I know is that at this point, I am co-hosting the show. If there's any other questions, kindly leave it with my secretary. Her name is Monica Lewinsky. So tell me, what would you like to talk about?
Well, now, I want to talk about the New York Islanders. Listen, before I start about the New York Islanders, I wanted to tell you that your presentation and the way you speak on the radio and the way you give over your thoughts is completely bullshit, and you suck at what you do. You have no future.
I apologize. Unfortunately, somebody decided to act like a fool and curse on the air. I do apologize for that. I don't know who called. I don't much care for it. But we'll take another call, assuming that this person is semi-normal. You are on the air. What's going on?
How are you? Love your show. You're a complete beast.
Thank you. Who am I speaking with?
David.
David.
David from New York City. I love this show. I listen every week. Anyway, I got a question for you. I really wanted to speak to Eli about it, you know, but you're good as well, obviously. I know Eli's a big Miami sports fan, so I just have a question that maybe you could pass along to him, you know, when he gets on, and I'll hear your opinion on it. Who do you feel is more overrated in Miami sports, Ryan Tannehill or LeBron James? I'll hang up and listen. Thanks. I love the show.
No problem. Thank you. Who is more overrated, Ryan Tannehill or LeBron James? Wow. That's kind of easy. I'm not really sure what kind of question. I'm not knocking the question. I'm just looking at it from this perspective that LeBron James, how can you really overrate the guy? I mean, what has he done? He's already won the ring. He's won the MVPs. He's performed pretty solidly. How do I even say solidly? I mean, he's been amazing. He's been practically the best player in the NBA the last couple of seasons. You can't really overrate a guy that's practically subhuman. Ryan Tannehill, though. I don't know. Ellie's high on him. He likes him. He's a big fan of his. I don't much care for him. Then again, I'm a Giant fan. I'm a fan of the NFC East. So I don't follow Ryan Tannehill that much, but he didn't really jump out at me. I still personally think that the Dolphins drafted high at 8 when they took him. But we will see. He's got a couple of years to, you know, to show what it is that he can do. And we'll see, really. That's pretty much what it comes down to. We'll see what he can do. But at this point, you have to say that he's more overrated than James. I mean, he's LeBron James. The guy's done everything. He has done everything possible to get to where he is. I mean, what has LeBron James not done? Well, okay, fine. I guess you could say the one thing that he hasn't done is made, I guess, Cleveland love him again or feel for him again. That's probably the only thing, and maybe make Dan Gilbert smile. That's probably about all. But at this point, LeBron James has done it all. And by the way, an update, the Miami Heat are leading the Pacers 79-66 with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So for those of you who actually care about the Heat are leading and can potentially take a 3-2 lead in the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. That is pretty interesting if you care about either team. Unfortunately, I don't, for I am a New York Knicks fan, and I am still angry. Well, not so much angry, but disappointed and expected a little more, but we can't have everything that we want. So that being said, we're going to talk NBA playoffs. Not that there is much to discuss at this point. The San Antonio Spurs, what can you say about the Spurs other than they are the ageless wonder team, guys that are old, some that could be in rocking chairs, guys that are 4 minutes away from death, guys that are older than dirt, and yet they still manage to perform, and Popovich gets them motivated, he gets guys up to play, and they just manage to put it together, and they swept the Memphis Grizzlies. The Memphis Grizzlies, they beat the Thunder. And they didn't just beat the Thunder. They spanked the Thunder. Obviously, the injury to Russell Westbrook was huge. And that definitely changed the way that they played. But still, look at what San Antonio did to Memphis. And tell me that the Heat or the Pacers are not a little worried about that. As far as the Heat and the Pacers series goes, it's been a tale of two different teams. The Miami Pacers with Paul George absolutely unloading, and this is his coming out party. because the guy was an all-star this year. He's a solid NBA player. And he took it to a whole nother level. In game one, I mean, what can you say about that shot? It's just clutch. The guy was clutch. And Hibbert in the middle, Hibbert, again, this guy is, he hasn't even reached his peak. He hasn't, I don't believe he's come close to it. I believe he could actually put up points. I believe this guy can score. And if he can consistently score, he's an easily a 20-10 guy, averaging 2.5 blocks a game, possibly 3. I'm a big believer in Roy Hibbert's game. He brings a certain kind of a smash-mouth center attitude that we haven't seen in years. The last guy who played at the center position, I'm not comparing him at all to Shaquille O'Neal, let's be honest. I got to be on serious drugs to even think about comparing the two. But Hibbert gets in your face and just puts the ball into the stands. He doesn't care to bang. He's a banger. That is what I've missed, obviously, growing up in the 80s and 90s and the early parts of the 2000s when you saw centers like Hakeem Olajuwon, Alonzo Mourning, Patrick Ewing, Shaq. I mean, these guys got in your face, and they did not let you get into the lane. You wanted to put the ball in the hoop. You wanted to drive to the hole and throw something off the glass and bank it in. It didn't happen because when you came into the lane, your shot got swatted unless you were unbelievable, unless you were Jordan or Iverson or somebody that was could unbelievably cut up a guard and then, you know, beat you to the hole. It didn't happen. And Roy Hibbert brings that sort of mental toughness, that physical toughness, to the table. And it's a pleasure to watch him. We're going to take a call now. Let's see who it is. You are on the air.
Hey, how are you doing? This is Steven.
Speaking with.
This is Steven. How are you doing, Izzy?
What's going on, Steven? What can I do for you?
So I got two things to say. Number one, I think you're great, and I can't wait for you to have your own show. That's number one. But number two,
I do appreciate it. Thank you.
We have a mutual friend who keeps calling this game between the Pacers and the Heat the game of the year. Would you agree?
Would I agree? We have a mutual friend that's calling it. It has to be the game of the year at this point. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, it's the biggest game of the year up until now. No question about it. But game of the year, come on. Nobody gives a, you know.
Well, for you and I, you see, I see you're calling from a 443 number. I believe that that's Maryland. Is that true?
It's in the Maryland area, yeah.
Okay, it is in the Maryland area. Okay, so you probably don't care for the Heat. I don't know if you care for the Pacers. I'm a Knicks fan, so personally, I'd rather do this show. And I probably, if I wasn't, I could think of 100 things I would rather do than watch the Heat and the Pacers, but As a fan of the NBA, let's be honest, at this point, it's definitely, it's got to be at this point the game of the year. Is it the best game? I don't think so. I mean, there have been better games in the NBA.
Well,
but
yeah,
at this point, I mean, what can you say?
Hey, look, there it is. But hey, love the show. You're doing great. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Take care.
See you later.
Okay, so we just had a caller. He asked a question in regards to this being the game of the year. I'm not really sure what else could be a better game. I mean, this is the only game that's on. The Spurs are waiting. They're waiting to see who they are going to face. And regardless of who they face, I can tell you right now that that team is scared. The Pacers will have time to rest, to relax, to chill. Tim Duncan can finish through his divorce papers and join the Tony Parker party. They can just relax. And whoever comes their way, they will perform to the best of their abilities. The question is, who do you think would be a better matchup with the Pacers? Will it be with the Spurs? Will it be the Pacers or the Heat? You tell me what you think. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the NFL.
DJ Khaled. Yeah.
we are back. Before we discuss the NFL, I see that we have a caller. We're going to take it and see who it is.
Hello.
Hello, you are on the air.
Hello, my friend. Am I on the air right now?
Yes, sir, you are on the
air.
Oh,
God, I'm taking a sheet and I wasn't even ready.
God, I wish that I could screen these calls. I really wish I could screen them. I don't know. The show is called, people. The show is referred to as the ramblings of a diehard sports fan. The show is not some comedic situation for you to get on and, I guess, poof, and call on some weird number so you can sound like a nut job. To the 12 listeners that we have, so congratulations to you and to the gentleman before who called to voice his beautiful opinion and to congratulate me on doing such a phenomenal job. I'm obviously joking. That being said, I do appreciate the calls, guys, especially the ones where you're talking with your mouth and not with your behind. So like I said before, we're going to discuss some NFL now. We're going to talk New York Giants. New York Giant fans are a little bit angry, a little perturbed, I guess you could say, because Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz have not shown up to OTAs. I understand the reason for both of them not to show up. It makes perfect sense. Let's look at the Hakeem Nicks situation. He's in the final year of his contract, and he wants to get a big deal. So the way he looks at it is as little time as he can be on the field, the less of a chance he has to get injured. He was injured. He's pretty much been injured most of his career. He's gotten hurt. He hasn't been a healthy player, has not been on the field. So he wants to sit out anything that's voluntary, and until it's mandatory for him to show up, he will not show up. He wants to get paid, and I'm not going to say that I respect it, that I appreciate it, but I understand it. And he wants to avoid any type of injury. So that, understandably, would be the reason that he has decided not to play. Victor Cruz, in a different situation, Victor Cruz is working on extension. Both sides claim that they are very, very close. They are extremely close in talks, and they should have something done soon. When that is, I don't know. Cruz will get paid. Let's face it. He's going to get paid. Somebody, the Giants will pay him his money, and he's worth it. I mean, undrafted player comes in here out of UMass and tears it up. He deserves the money. And Nick's, you know what, he actually deserves it. He deserves money too, but the fact is the Giants, they will not be able to afford both guys. It just doesn't make any sense. After signing Beattie and giving him that big deal, there is no way that they're going to pay two guys. They also just re-signed Barden, a guy that's been on the team for 4 years, hasn't really panned out, had one big game last year, 9 catches, 138 yards against Carolina. Other than that, he has been a no-show for the G-men. He was injured one season, I'll give you that, but hasn't really produced. A guy that's at 6'7", 240, and he's a receiver. We're not even talking Tony Gonzalez tight end. We're not talking Antonio Gates. We're talking a wideout, a guy that can run a 4'4", 4'3.5", roughly. So Ramsey's Barden, at some point, should pan out. He should pan out for the G-men. I believe he's got the skills. Eli could utilize him if they decided, and I think this would be the smartest thing. The problem is that he's not a blocker. So to convert him to the tight end position and set him along the line and use him in play-action scenarios, from a theoretical standpoint, it's a great idea. But the facts are he cannot block, and unless he learns to block, he can't be a tight end, and he's going to have to play on the outside. But he does have a ton of talent. Wow. The New York Jets. For some reason, the New York Jets come to mind. Why? Why are the New York Jets on my mind? I'm not even a Jet fan. I guess I'm a fan of drama and stupidity. And when you look at the Rex Ryan Circus, there is not a bigger festival of stupidity in town. There isn't. If Isaiah Thomas was running the Knicks, there would be less craziness going on there. The Jets are run by charlatans in clown suits, guys that don't understand how to run a franchise. Where do I even begin? The Tebow story, the Sanchez story. They draft Geno Smith. They're basically telling Sanchez, well, listen, dude, we're going to try to get a guy to compete with you. We didn't pay first-round value, but we paid second-round, so we don't feel so bad. And the truth is, the way I view it, drafting him in the second round, okay, you didn't waste their first pick. D. Milliner, I still think, was a solid pick. He's unbelievably good, assuming he stays healthy. Their second pick, not a huge fan. He doesn't fit their defense unless they decide to change the format of their defense. That was not a good pick. So, Geno Smith. What do we know about Geno Smith? What we've learned about him is that he isn't all there mentally. He's not a mentally strong quarterback, a guy with moxie, a guy that can perform under the big lights. Because look what happened the night of the draft. The guy wasn't drafted. And then he basically tells the NFL, he tells them, guess what? I'm not going to show up for the second round or the third round because I don't care. I wasn't drafted the first night, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to cry. I didn't get drafted, so I'm not going to come back. And somebody probably knocked him in the head and said, idiot, what you're going to do is you're going to get off your ass. You're going to go to that draft tomorrow, and you're going to get picked at some point. And don't be a fool. Don't show NFL teams that you're mentally weak. And he still showed them that he was mentally weak. And who took him? The New York Jets, a team that is already mentally weak with a mentally unstable quarterback. And at the time, they had Tebow also. They had Garrard. They had Greg McElschmeck. They had a team of trash. There were five quarterbacks. And they go and they bring another guy in. So basically, either one of two things. Either their brass thinks that Smith will make Sanchez play better, or they believe Geno Smith is the future of the Jets. My opinion, I think Sanchez could play better in a different uniform, and I believe Geno Smith will be a bust. I don't believe in him. I believe he is a college quarterback. He is a product of a Dana Holgorsen offense. I don't believe in him. I don't. Even if he had the talents of Andrew Luck, he has the brain of a Ryan Leaf. And look at Ryan Leaf. Talent from here to tomorrow, but the guy was unstable. The guy was basically he was nuts. And look how that turned out. The New York Jets. Every time I talk about it, I think about it and I say, you know what? I'm not a Jet fan. I shouldn't get that angry, but I'm angry for the Jet fans because it's as if their brass just wants you guys to suffer year in and year out. Why is the question I'm asking you? We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more basketball.
And they stay there, and they say yeah, and they say there. Cause all I do is sweep, sweep, sweep. And if you going in, put your hands in the air, make them stay there.
Ludacris going in on the verse, cause I've never been defeated and I won't stop now. Keep your hands up, get them in the sky for the homies that ain't make it in my folks locked down. I never went nowhere, what they say in Luda's back. Blame it on that contour, the hood call it Luda Yak. And I'm on this foolish track.
And it appears that the game has ended. The Miami Heat have beaten the Pacers 90-79, which means the Heat are up 3-2 in that series. So the way I view it is that the Heat should either win the next game or win in seven. So we're looking at the Miami Heat, and we are looking at the San Antonio Spurs. Now tell me something. Is this a series that you care to watch? Would this be a series, assuming that the Heat do beat the Pacers? I would like nothing more than to see Tim Duncan throwing one down over RuPaul. I'm sorry, I meant Chris Bosh. I apologize. I was just channeling my inner, I believe, I don't know if it was KG or it was Shaquille. I forgot who it was. One of those two fine, upstanding citizens made a comment regarding Mr. Bosh's look. But enough about RuPaul. The fact is that the Spurs, like we were discussing before, they played an unbelievable series against the Grizzlies. They've played really solidly. So regardless of who they face, they will put up a very, very good series. And I honestly am looking forward. I would like to see the Miami Heat face the San Antonio Spurs. I think that that series could turn out really, really, really well. We're going to swing back to the Knicks just for a bit. I just wanted to make another statement about the New York Knicks, and I thought about it deeply over the last week. And I said to myself, self, what do the Knicks have to do in the offseason to improve the quality of their team? What must they do? I'll tell you what they got to do. They got to surround Carmelo Anthony with pure shooters that have some concept of defense. A big man in the middle can't really be an offensive factor unless the point guard is playing up to par. Early in the season when Felton was pick and rolling with Tyson Chandler, they worked well together as a team and they were playing really well. And that was when Carmelo wasn't even on the floor. And when Carmelo is on the floor, it becomes the isolation game. It is one against three. So what you want to do is you want to see Carmelo get the ball in the blocks. You want to see him post, let's say, 10-15 feet out. He's backing down. He gets double-team, triple-team. You kick it out to a guy on the wing for an open three. And if you can make roughly 40 to 42% of your shots, you should be successful. I mean, look what the Knicks did this year. But they need to see some kind of defense. You will not see J.R. Smith in a Knick uniform next year. I guarantee you will not see him in a Knick uniform. There will be a team looking for a guy, either a hot or cold guy, that will give him a 2 to 3 year deal. He'll get paid. He'll get his money. And he'll continue to dribble the ball with a quarter of a second left and then take a 27-foot fadeaway shot from the corner, which is impossible because technically 27 feet would mean he'd be in the second row. But J.R. Smith will not be a Knick, so you don't have to worry about his bumbling, idiotic play. Chris Copeland, I do like what he can do offensively. Let me rephrase. I love what this kid does offensively. He's a bit of a bonehead when it comes to defense. He's a European-style player. I mean, the guy played in Europe for 7 years. So, statistically, and the way and the makeup of his game is that of a European player, a scorer, a guy that runs and guns, doesn't play zero defense. End games, the end of the game in Europe, the scores can be anywhere between, I don't know, 140 to like 130. So he could score 40 points. And that seems to be the type of player that he is. But the guy does have a ton of offensive talent, and if given the opportunity, the guy can easily put 20 in a game. He's infinite range. I mean, the guy doesn't even, he can create his own shot. He doesn't need spacing. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. The ball gets in his hands, he sets, fires, bang. He doesn't even have to set. He's just the type of guy that can score anywhere on the floor. And I believe that the guy can score. If somehow someone can teach him to play a little bit of defense, this guy will be a really, really solid player. We have a call coming in now. We're going to take the call. Let's listen in. Hello.
Is Zibi.
Eli.
I am one very happy man, my friend.
Talk to me. Talk to me. Go on a rant about the Heat. Let's hear it.
It's just, the thing is, Indy is exactly what you expected from them. They've given the Heat a nice little scare, but at no point have they really dominated Miami. Miami has played like crap in most of the games, to be honest with you, and it's still been close. Yet when Miami turns it on, Miami runs away with it. And that's where I think the people who are talking about the demise of the Miami Heat were wrong, is that Indy put up their best efforts and still barely squeaked it out, whereas Miami, when they're playing their best ball, it's not even close. I mean, that third quarter was Miami at its best, the whole second half, really. Stifling defense, high percentage shots. I mean, they forced Indiana to be 36% from the field in the second half, while Miami was shooting 53%. And LeBron James had his hand on 25 of the 30 points in the third quarter. For anybody to ever say anything about LeBron not clutch anymore, you just got to be a moron. The dude went into beast mode, and that was it.
Well, that is what is expected of LeBron James being the best player in the NBA, and it's not really arguable at this point. I will tell you, Eli, I got a call in earlier. Guy asked a question. He asked, who is more of an overrated player? Is it Ryan Tannehill or LeBron James? It was directed to you, so I will allow you to respond. What is your opinion of the two?
What in the world is that kind of question? I mean, come on. That's not even should be justified with a response. That's let the retards out of the asylum. That's what the question is to me. You know, like, come on.
Wow.
What does that question even mean? Ryan Tannehill is a rookie quarterback. LeBron James is the best basketball player we've seen in our lifetime. You know, you call the tail end of Jordan, you know, except for Jordan in his heyday, LeBron James is the best basketball player that you've seen, and you're seeing him in his prime dominating, and it's just not like, what is that? LeBron is not an overrated player. People are upset at him for reasons that, you know, somewhat are justified, that, you know, history should be, you know, put in the past. Let that stuff go. You know, the celebration, you know, LeBron, he said it was a stupid thing to do it on live TV. I mean, get over it. Players have done far worse. And other than that, what has the man really done, you know? So LeBron James overrated? Not in the slightest. You know, you need to be able to stop with the petty nonsense and just appreciate the dominance that you're seeing from this player. All these fans who are telling me and asking about these questions are just bitter that they didn't go to his, that he didn't go to their team. Because I remember when the decision, when LeBron was in the throes of making the decision and we had those few days leading up to it and where he would choose, everyone convinced themselves, you know, on the top teams, the Knicks, the Bulls, they convinced themselves they're going to him, and that was, you know, a decision. And now all of a sudden, well, he's already over this. Bull crap, because if you wanted him so badly, that means you know exactly what he is. You're just bitter at the fact that he didn't choose your team. So shut up and enjoy watching the best basketball player you will see in a long, long time. Just dominate, and not just dominate. He's unselfish in the way he does it. He gets assists. He plays defense in all five slots. He goes about his business, and he makes the team a better team overall, unlike certain players that you know about on your favorite team that your team was dying for also, who is a great pure scorer, but other than that, that's it. He does not make his team better overall, and that is Carmelo, whereas LeBron is the complete opposite. I mean, he passes the ball. He doesn't look to score first. He plays great defense end-to-end, and you know what? How could you... I'm still mind-boggled over this question that like you could even feel that you're doing a service in any way, shape, or form by repeating a question of that form of Tannehill and LeBron James. That's the thing.
is Michael Jordan a better basketball player, or was, you know, the backup to the, you know, the women's NBA, whatever the heck they call themselves these days, you know, all these commercials. Has anyone ever watched a WNBA game that they're actually, like, still in existence? I just don't get how they're in existence, but that's a side point. To me, that's what that question is Michael Jordan a better basketball player than the worst woman in the WNBA? Ryan Tannehill, I mean, he's a rookie quarterback. He has yet to play his second year. He had a solid year. He didn't have a great year by any shape or form. He got a little bit shafted in the fact that he came in a rookie class that had great quarterbacks into it. It's hard to stay on the level of Andrew Luck, RG3, you know, those type of players, you know, Wilson. But you should be ashamed of yourself of even repeating that question. I'm sorry.
I had to because I did catch a hint of, I wouldn't say laughter, but the goal was probably to then raise your blood pressure. But he did ask the question, so I said, you know what, as a gentleman, I will respond and I will ask you.
It's the same idiot who's been calling the whole time that Ryan Tannehill's a bad quarterback, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. But look at the facts. The facts were Ryan Tannehill was a rookie quarterback coming in on a team that was a bad team the year before. It wasn't a good team. It was a bad team. He did, you know, he wasn't great. He was solid, and he was a quarterback with no tools around him. Now, this year is the year that's going to be real telling for him because now they went out and they got tools for him to work with, something they didn't have for him last year. But it's just a nonsensical question. Let's go back to LeBron James. I mean, the dude carried the team on his shoulders tonight. You know, he wasn't able to do it in game four because Indiana flustered him. But let's not overlook that. Indiana is a very good team, and they have tools on the team that Miami isn't really built for to match up one-to-one with. They've got size that Miami doesn't have. So Miami's playing a different game, and Indiana has successfully, and to their credit, thrown Miami off their game. And at times, Miami has given in and been thrown off and not able to bounce back from it. But if Indiana really is the supreme team that people are trying to say that they are over Miami, there were games that they should have run away with it. I mean, tonight, Miami came out flat at times, and yet they still were within four at the half, ran away with it in the third. I mean, if you're a much better team than the other team we're playing, the spurt that Indiana had tonight, they should have run away with it, and that should have been the ball game, which Miami has been able to do when they get on their runs, but Indiana has not in their runs. That, to me, is why Miami is still the better team and will win this series. Whether they can close it out Saturday night in Game 6 will be very interesting to see because, as we know, you know, Indiana plays well at home. They've got their backs to the wall. It's going to be, you know, Frank Vogel has that team very prepared, and he'll have them prepared to play Miami in the season, but Miami has not lost back-to-back games since January 22nd. You're telling me that with the series on the line, they're going to lose two in a row? I'm not buying it. I said it at the beginning of the series, it would be a very tough and competitive series, but Miami is still the better team, and Miami wins the series. And I still, you know, hold by that. And it's exactly like I thought it was. It's been a great series of basketball, you know, nail biters at the end, and once again, Indiana, the two games that Miami has lost, it was still within Miami's grasp with a minute left. That is not something you have to look disappointed and down on. You grabbed the wins in three of the five games so far. You know, this is still your series.
I definitely hear what you're saying, and it makes sense. The Heat were within range of those games, but also let's look at the Pacers. The game that LeBron banked the shot in with no time on the clock, I mean, that could have gone either way. That could have potentially gone either way.
In that game, Miami shouldn't have been in that position to even do it. I mean, the games that have been close, Indiana has outplayed Miami, and Miami still is within range and have won two of those three games. You know, those games that Indiana let slide through the cracks, it's not like they were, you know, they were playing overall better, much better basketball than Miami was, and Miami at its worst is still in range with a minute left in the game to beat the Pacers. Whereas, as I said, on the opposite, when Miami's playing at its best and Indiana's in a rut, Miami's running away with the games.
They are the better team. They should win. This is, let's put it this way, the way that the series has panned out, it was expected for the Heat to win in six. Some guys were saying possible sweep. Some said in five. Made sense. If it does go to a game seven, I would obviously be impressed, and you'd have to be impressed with the play of the Indiana Pacers. I mean, without Paul George and Hibbert, who do you think they are?
I mean, look, this is going to be blunt here, but to me, the real swipe it out, you know, rivalry that's going to be the next few years is going to be Miami-Indiana and not really Miami-New York as people expected. You know, we said it last year that has the potential. It's coming out to be. I think you'll see Miami-Indiana in the playoffs for a few years to come, and it's going to get real testy. I mean, you see it. Chris Anderson earlier in the game had that cheap shot where he knocked down Hansborough, but let's also put something in perspective, and the announcers went on a little about this as to why Anderson wasn't ejected for the shove. People don't look. If you look at that play over again, Hansborough was attempting to shove Anderson back. Not that Anderson, you know, not that Hansborough initiated, but Hansborough was trying to shove Anderson back, and Anderson shoved him first. So it wasn't like Hansborough wasn't trying to do anything in retaliation, and Anderson just kept it going. You know, people overlooked that Hansborough was trying to shove him back. It was a dirty play by Chris Anderson, but, you know, unlike the contest that the announcers were trying to point out was the Nazi Muhammad play against LeBron in last series, but with the Muhammad play, Nazi threw LeBron down to the floor. LeBron wasn't even thinking of retaliating at that moment. Whereas my belief is, and let's be clear about this, I'm not excusing what Chris Anderson did, and it wouldn't have shocked me if they threw him out, but I understand it because Hansborough was trying to, you know, to get back into that shoving match, so it wasn't like it was just one-sided, and that to me is the difference between the Nazi Muhammad. And this is why, you know, there is a lot of bad blood between these two teams. It's a great matchup, Game 6. In what's been a great series, should be just as good as all the rest of the games, and hell, it's going to be fun Saturday night.
So, question: are you going to fly to Indiana for this game?
Well, you know, as the great movie The Big Lebowski said, we don't roll on Shabbos. So, since the game is starting at 8:30, you know, it's going to be kind of hard. And the sundown is not till well after that. I think I'm just going to get someone over here in Atlanta to DVR it, you know, start it right after the Shabbos ends and take it from there. You know, I'd be very tempted if it goes 7 to go to Miami, but I've got a few conflicts in schedule there. Come the finals, when Miami's in that position to clinch, that is really where my temptation to fly down and watch is.
Well, I got to say, though, you made a very good point with the comment by Mr. Sopcak. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to play that very clip of the Shomer Shabbos. I feel like we all need to hear it. It's how shall I say it? It's too epic. Unfortunately, what is this over here? Of course, how awesome is YouTube with the advertisements? Killing a moment. Ah, the moment's dead already.
Oh, yeah.
The moment's dead. We're gonna play it anyway because I have to hear it. I need to hear 30 seconds.
I'm Shomer Shabbos.
What's that one?
Yeah, and in the meantime, what do I tell Lebowski?
Saturday, Donnie, is Shabbos, the Jewish day of rest. That means I don't work. I don't drive a car. I don't fucking ride in a car. I don't handle money. I don't turn on the oven. And I sure as shit don't fucking roll!
Always a classic, is.
Hey, Walter, classic. God, I miss that guy. Why can't they make a second Big Lebowski? He really, God, what the hell can you say about that? That can about sum it up. So, obviously, like you said, you're not going to roll in Shabbos, so you're not going to fly, but you'll probably get someone.
Netflix should do what they did with the rest of the development and put together and make another Big Lebowski movie. How great would that be?
I'm not even sure. I'd probably be very excited. That is a cult classic, if any. It's assuming that John Goodman doesn't die at some point of heart failure, because he's probably the same size as Dom DeLuise. And Dom DeLuise, he expired a little while ago due to his large girth.
John Goodman's one of those guys that you could keel over at any second and none of us would be surprised, right?
Unfortunately, that is the case, but we need him to stay alive because we need to hear him. We need to hear him say,
"Well, Monty, I don't turn on the oven, and I sure as shit don't fucking roll." Shoulder Shabbos.
God, I can't.
You know, it's that time of the night. It's been a pleasure, and till next week.
Thank you. So we will listen. You will be co-hosting next week, I presume. Is that correct?
As long as the schedule for the NBA Finals does not conflict.
Well, we shall see what happens. Thanks for the call, Eli, and we hope to see you next week. Have a great night.
Peace.
Okay, that was Eli Gray. He is the normal host of this show. He decided to call in after the Miami Heat did what they did. He then went on a rant. A happy rant on how the Heat obliterated the Pacers tonight, and he answered that question regarding Tannehill and LeBron James. So to the caller, thanks for asking it. I knew it would probably infuriate him, but because I wanted to respect your wishes, I did give him that call. We have approximately 2.5 minutes left to the show, so I'm going to leave you with what I like to call the final thought, which I conveniently stole from Jerry Springer. And here is my final thought. If the New York Knicks want to remain a factor in the Eastern Conference, they need to do what I said earlier. They need to surround Carmelo Anthony with shooters that can play some kind of defense, guys that shoot the high percentage from downtown, but can defend to an extent. Because look at it from this perspective. If Carmelo Anthony's getting triple teamed and he's kicking the ball to guys in the corner, top of the key, and they can shoot the rock from downtown, the Knicks can be successful. And if they play some form of defense, a little bit of defense, just enough, they can be a factor. I agree with Eli, however, that the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat look like the... That will be a rivalry in the NBA East, as well that they should. And it makes sense. Well, thank you very much for the calls, and obviously the normal calls. We should be on next week, either Wednesday night, 10:30 to 11:30, or Thursday night, 10:30 to 11:30. Thank you very much for calling in, and we're going to leave you with this song. Peace.
And they stay there, and they say yeah, and they stay there. 'Cause all I do is sweep, sweep, sweep. And if you going in, put your hands in the air, make them stay there.
Ludacris going in on the verse, 'cause I've never been defeated and I won't stop now. Keep your hands up, get them in the sky for the homies that ain't make it in my folks locked down. I never went nowhere, but they saying Luda's back. Blame it on that contour, the hood call it Luda Yak. And I'm on this foolish track, so I spit my foolish flow. My hands go up and down, like strippers' booties go. My verses still be serving, type like a million virgins. Last time on a college remix, now I'm on the original version. Can't never count me out, y'all better count me in. Got 20 bank accounts, accountants count me in.